You're listening to
Cat Tales. Hi, I'm Kat, and welcome to Cat Tales. With classic songs like A Night to Remember, I Can Make You Feel Good, and There It Is, 80s soul band Shalimar sold over 25 million records worldwide and collected no less than 100 gold, silver and platinum awards. As well as thrilling audiences with a dynamic blend of funky feel-good music, band member Jeffrey Daniel was regarded as a fashion icon and trendsetter, bringing street dance to the UK and teaching Michael Jackson how to moonwalk. This is the one with Jeffrey Daniel.
On the line today, all the way from Japan, I have got the legendary Jeffrey Daniel from Shalimar. And hello, Jeffrey, how are you?
Are you sure you got the right one? You said legendary. It might not be me.
That's you, all right. You are the legendary. You've got some great credits to your name. Come on. You've been, you know, in Shalimar from the amazing heights, the heady heights of the 80s. You're still performing with those guys. And, of course, you've got such a fabulous accolade of dance and choreography as well. So, yeah, I think legendary fits you.
Wow, that's amazing. I'm honored. Thank you very much.
So let's start with Shalimar. That's probably the best place to start, isn't it? You're obviously doing some UK dates at the moment with Shalimar. You're bringing them back to the UK, aren't you? Just tell me a little bit about how you've managed to keep going in, you know, a music industry that's changed very, very, you know, considerably since the 80s to now. How have you managed to sustain a career for so long?
Okay, well, the funny thing about it is we hadn't been that consistent with it. When we broke up in the 80s, we disbanded and we didn't come together. Then when LL Cool J and Babyface decided to do the cover of For the Lover in You featuring Shalimar, that's when Howard and myself really talked for the first time since the group had broken up, and that was in 96. And so Howard and I got together and we talked out things and we thought it would be a good idea to come back together again. And so I think the blessing is because we weren't being there consistently, we didn't kind of like, we didn't wear out our welcome and we didn't run our course. So when the group broke up, we were reaching our zenith and we just disappeared. And the fans were like shocked and it's like, wow. So I think us coming back again in today's context, it's like the fans have a chance to see us again, and they're really happy to see us again, and they're glad that we're back again. And the people are out there, they're dancing, they're singing along. Sometimes we can't hear ourselves because they're singing along. There it is, I can make you feel good. I mean, they are coming in and singing. They're bringing the next generation and the generation after that as well. And, I mean, we're just having a great time. It's amazing. So I wasn't expecting this to be happening at this point in my life, but it is, and it's going well, exceptionally well.
Oh, it's amazing, isn't it? I mean, in the heady 80s, you know, 25 million records sold worldwide. I suppose after having that kind of height, you didn't expect to have a resurgence of that. So that must feel great.
Yeah, plus I was off onto other things, you know, like when Shalimar broke up, for me, it wasn't about making records. I went on to do other things. I was doing Starlight Express, a movie with Paul McCartney. I was hosting 620 Soul Train on British television. I did a radio show in Japan for 3 years in Sapporo. I was choreographing. I was doing things behind the scenes and this and that. And I was loving it because I love, I'm a creative person and I love being creative and creating things or doing new things. So for me, it wasn't about continuing to make records. Jody and Howard, their primary thing is, you know, still being a recording artist and making records. But for me, I've done so many things.
Yeah, and I think that's the bit that gives you the longevity, doesn't it? And doing those different things also, I'm guessing, feeds in with the creativity of the next creative project you've got.
Yes, yes, yes.
So something like, you know, let's take the fact that you introduced, you know, street dance to the UK, really, didn't you? You brought something new and amazing to the TV that the young generation in the UK had never seen before. So how did that feel to you at that time?
Well, when I was doing it, I wasn't aware of the implications of what I was doing. But after I did it, and then the reaction we started getting, I was like, wow. You know, it was blowing my mind as well as their minds, because I was doing what I was already doing. Like, I started, really, I got into the body popping aspect of it around, let's say, 78 to 79. And I first did it on Soul Train in America in 79. First did the backslide on 79. And then I did Top of the Pops in 82. And so it's something I was already doing and cultivating. So I just went on and did it. And then after that, we got the reactions and everything just went boom. So I was just as surprised as they were. And it was just like, wow.
Yeah. To inspire all that, that whole movement must have been absolutely incredible. But where did you get the inspiration yourself? Because that must have been quite an amazing leap from traditional dance into something that was so organic in terms of your body movement.
Well, I've never done, I can't say never done, sorry. Of course, I've done traditional dancing, but then there's a long time that I wasn't doing traditional dancing, such as locking, the robot, whacking, and these things that we're doing from Soul Train. And then I'm from L.A., so the West Coast was like leading in the dancing movement at the time. And so all the dances that we're cultivating on the West Coast, and then along came body popping, which was one of the later ones. The later after that came breaking, but I didn't get into breaking. I wasn't spinning on my head and rolling on the ground thing. But so body popping was an evolution from that whole robotics locking into, bam, body popping and the miming and the backslide, which Michael called the moonwalk.
Yes, he misnamed that, I think, didn't he? I mean, this is quite the incredible thing, the fact that you taught Michael Jackson the moonwalk, which was actually the backslide, I believe, wasn't it? So how did that all come about? Because that's quite an incredible accolade to have on your CV there, Jeffrey. What happened?
Well, as I said, I did it in 1979 on television. And they just happened to be playing a Michael Jackson song when we did it. And I did a solo exhibition on Soul Train. Once again, they played a Michael Jackson song. But I did not know Michael was watching me on Soul Train all those years when I was dancing on Soul Train. Because I was definitely watching him in the Jackson 5. But I had no idea that I was one of his favorite dancers. So, because I'm reading in the press about he loves Fred Astaire and he goes to see Sammy Davis Jr. And, you know, he likes those Hollywood legends that were dancing at that. But I did not know that if he's sitting at home watching me on Soul Train. So that was amazing when I finally found that out. So Charlemagne were playing at Disneyland, and we're doing a run there for the graduation ceremonies. And so my road manager came and said, Jeffrey, your student's coming. I said, my student? He said, yeah. And I know what he's talking about. And sure enough, Michael Jackson came and he brought little Janet Jackson with him, and they stood on the wing of our stage and watched us perform, because I was making so much ruckus about this thing I was doing. People thought that a rope was pulling me. They thought I had wheels on my shoes. They thought there was oil on the floor. People couldn't understand how I was gliding across the floor backwards like that. So Michael came and he watched it. And after that, that's when we got a call from him to come and, you know, teach him how to do the dance.
He wants to know how to do it. And you can understand that, can't you, Mr. Because it was an absolutely amazing, you know, almost a miraculous kind of movement that you were bringing to the, you know, to the TV at that stage. Wasn't that absolutely incredible? So from that point then, I guess, you started to have a personal relationship with Michael, didn't you? And was involved in the choreographing of some of his videos as well, I understand.
Right. I mean, I've had a 20-year working relationship with him off and on, and I'm in the Beat It video, just in it. And I'm not in a lot of the dance scene, because while we were filming Beat It downtown Los Angeles, Charlemagne was recording up in Beverly Hills at the Studio Masters studio in Beverly Hills. So I was going back and forth. Like, whenever I wasn't needed in the studio, I would jet downtown and I would participate in the Beat It video, but I had to keep calling. We didn't have mobile phones back then. So I had to keep calling back to the studio, knowing that if they needed me, okay, so Jeffrey, maybe you got another 2 hours or you, okay, you know, 30 minutes, and I'd have to jump in my car and zip. So I was going back and forth. So I'm in Beat It, but then come the next album, which was Bad, then, yes, I choreographed the Bad video and the Smooth Criminal video. I went to Brazil with him to do the They Don't Really Care About Us video. So I worked with him on that. And then the Ghost it's like a mini movie type thing. It's kind of odd because he spent so much money and worked on Ghosts so long. I think it should have been put in cinemas and could have recouped some money back, because that thing, I mean, Stan Winston, yeah. You know, the special effects mm-hmm. guy from yeah. Jurassic Park and all that.
Sure.
He gets the costumes and makeup and all these special effects and things. And it was just released like not even one of the most publicized videos, I wouldn't think.
Wow.
The Ghost. But so much time and money went into it. I was surprised. So, and then the last job I had, when he started his history tour, I didn't need to go on tour because I wasn't one of the dancers on his tour, and I wasn't choreographing anymore. So he placed me at MJJ Records. So I was doing creative consulting and A&R for his record label, MJJ Music. That's the last job I had in America.
Terrific. So how do you come up with all these kind of amazing sequences? Because the work that you're talking about there is absolutely incredible to watch, isn't it? And it made everybody aghast at the time. It's like, goodness me, what's going on? How on earth are they doing that? How do you actually come up with ideas that are going to, you know, be able to be done, and then secondly, consistently to that kind of standard?
Well, you're talking about the dance itself?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Well, if you talk about that dance, you have to. Let's go back now. When we were doing the robot, and this is funny. This is a really funny story. Mm-hmm. When we were doing the robot, we're imagining a machine is inside of our body. So as I'm moving, I'm hearing this. I'm hearing this sound of every movement I'm doing. When we're doing the backslide, which Michael named the moonwalk. It's like we're on an escalator that's going backwards, but we're walking forward.
Yeah.
Now, after all of that, look at movies now. Robots don't move like robots anymore. They look like humans and move as naturally as humans do.
Yes.
So in today's context, that never would have worked. Come the Terminator and all that, now robots are just like humans.
Yeah.
You know? But back then, robots were like a mechanical thing, you know, moving like zip, 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 zip,
yeah.
zip, zip. That's how. So we were imagining that, and I'm hearing that in my mind and doing the backslide. But now, so in today's context, it wouldn't be a mechanical thing. I think it would be more like an android, fluid, humanistic,
yeah.
futuristic. I don't know.
Yeah.
So thank God I was creating back then when we still had that mechanical mindset, you know.
Absolutely. And I suppose it is, that's the thing, isn't it? It's of that time. And I think really the whole Shalimar
exactly.
movement sort of captured that with the, you know, the music, the funk soul sound, with the, you know, the body popping and the street art and of course the dress and the fashion.
Exactly. The fashion. Oh, I'm glad you mentioned that. The fashion played a very big part of it. And like when I changed my hairstyle from the afro to this kind of like punk style, mm-hmm. and I had to straighten, I had the braids, and that people just really freaked out because I was one of the first ones to do it in the R&B world.
Wow.
And then Prince was doing it as well. So at one time, the only two black guys who were doing something like that were myself and Prince.
Wow.
We were the forerunners of that, of the New Wave movement, as far as going into the black community. And I picked it up from the kids in London, you know, on the streets of King's Road, and that I saw these mohawks and shaved heads mm-hmm. and things like that. And I said, hey, well, you know, I want a piece of that, you know.
Yeah.
It was just, everything was exciting to me. And I was getting clothes from World's End, the Kensington Market, all these places, you know, just all this funky, creative stuff that was going on. You know what's funny, and it's kind of a shame, a tragedy, is that back then, there was an English look, there was an English sound, and when on the streets, the English designers, the English fashion, now it's all corporate, it's all the top man, the Gucci, the Louis Vuitton, the this, the that, and it's everywhere. Like if you come to Japan, in the 80s, it was Kansai Yamamoto, Yoji Yamamoto, this designer, that designer, and now you go on the street and it's all the commercial shops are there, the corporate. So everyone's dressing and looking alike everywhere.
I know.
Where you have
it's awful,
isn't it? Just a few pockets of individuality. But after that, everyone's into the designer names and the same look.
I think that in a way it waters down that creativity that you had at the time of the 80s and the 90s, don't you think? I mean, it's almost like everybody's frightened or scared to be different. And that's a shame. It stops that. It stunts growth in a way, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. So I'm wondering, how are the kids that are coming up in the industry, especially because in the industry, you're supposed to be creative. You're supposed to be outstanding. Like when I first came to the UK and we're doing Top of the Pops, look at one episode of Top of the Pops. Mm. Bow Wow Wow, Dixie's Midnight Runner, maybe Duran Duran, Spandau Ballet, to Imagination, and all the way to ABC, the Bell Stars. Everyone was different. Dixie's Midnight Runner. Everything was different and so diverse. Now look at today's music market. All the girls are dressing like, you know, pole dancers and strip dancers and dressing extra sexy. And everyone's just doing the same thing. Or you have another niche and then everyone's doing that. Or another. All the hip-hop guys, you know, sagging pants and T-shirts and baseball caps turned backwards, da-da-da-da. I mean, how do you get on with, you're looking like that guy that looks like that guy that looks like that guy that looks like that guy? Where's the excitement? Where's the inspiration or creativity?
I totally agree. And it's, you know, looking back to those days, I mean, all the bands and the time that you're talking of there, I lived it. I remember all that sort of like excitement at the time. And, you know, there was polarization, wasn't there, in the music industry where you know, if you were a Shalimar fan, you probably weren't a Dexys Midnight Runner fan, or you were actually the quite funky both bands, so you possibly were. But,
I don't think so back then. Maybe for the UK fans. I don't know. But for me, I was loving all of it.
Yeah.
I was loving all of it. And it was so intriguing. And so for me, I was loving everything that was there. Maybe for the English audience, they stuck to their artists. I don't know. But I loved it all. I loved the Jam. I loved Dexys Midnight Runner. I loved Echo and the Bunnymen, Hazy Fantasy, Paul Weller. I was into it all. It was all so exciting of what was going on back then. Sade, what else did we have back there? I mean, there's so many groups, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, Mark Almond, yes. Mark Almond and Soft Cell. Oh, Thomas Dolby?
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
And Thompson Twins? Oh, come on.
Yeah.
It was all great.
It was. Do you know what? It would be great to have a teletransporter now, wouldn't it, and go back to that time, because it was a melting pot of talent, wasn't it? It really was.
Yeah. Yes, it was. And the funny thing was, if you went to Camden Palace on the same, was it the same night as Top of the Pops, a Thursday night or whatever, Steve Strange was hosting it, and you'd see Top of the Pops there, because whoever was in town for Top of the Pops, they'd be at Camden Palace.
Yeah, wow, amazing.
Or at the WAG Club on Wardour Street.
Crikey. What was amazing about that is actually the fact that you did rub shoulders with all of these different acts. Did you actually get all inspired from seeing what other people were inventing? Did that sort of spark new creativity in yourself?
It did, and it pushed you, because you'd see something happening over there and go, okay, all right, that's great, okay. Now we got to come with something. You know, we got to top that, you know. So it kept us on point. And there may have been things that you saw that were like, wow, you know, and wow, that's cool. And you may have like subconsciously picked up something from someone else, because you're trying not to copy. You don't want to be obvious or nothing, but maybe there are things you admire that someone else does that you might incorporate. I don't know, but I don't know. But it, like, the musical community was so tangible back then. We knew each other. We can go to a place and have a drink together and be somewhere. Where's the nucleus now? There's no nucleus. It's just spread out, you know?
Yeah, and I think that's probably what's missing now, isn't it? And perhaps that's why everything is all just homogenous and all just the same. And, you know, where do you get your inspiration now? Because, of course, you're still performing. You're still actually out there doing it. And I guess you've still got that hunger in the same kind of way. But where do you get your inspiration now?
Through cultures, as I always have as well. But there are some things out there that are inspiring. I mean, Bruno Mars is inspiring. You've got who else? I'm trying to think of someone that's people who are newly current. I mean, this, it's not like before, because very few people now, you can go through the whole album like in the back in the days. Like now they might have this one hit single that you like, or a couple of singles.
Sure.
But back in the day, it would be a whole album. I mean, Sam Smith, Adele, I mean, who's happening on the other side? Like this whole rap thing.
Yeah.
I think for me personally, I feel like rap has run its course because it's been going on since like the 80s, and here we are in 2018. So how am I going to be excited about a new rapper coming up talking about the same things and, you know, their money, their car, their jewelry, and what they drink and this and that? How can that still be exciting? I really don't know, but that's, they're keeping it going for some reason. I'm more of a musical person, and I really like good music.
Yeah.
And so I think I'm just more inspired by just life.
Yes, yes, I get
cultural and life. You know, I'm in between Nigeria, Japan, the UK, mostly, and I'm into those cultures, and I'm, you know, seeing what's going on there, and you know, the traditional things as well as the futuristic or current things that are going on. I'm into those things. I'm into the astrophysics movement, Neil deGrasse Tyson and all that. And I've always been so interested in the stars. I have a model. My model is, you all are looking at stars, but I'm studying galaxies.
Oh, I love that. Jeffrey, that's my kind
of model.
That's my kind of language. I love that. And I can see that in my mind's eye now. And I guess, you know, because you're an inspiration for so many other people, that's so true as well. I do love that. So if you've had to look back on this, you know, you've got all these lovely, wonderful things that you've done. Is there anything that really stands out as being the one thing that you'd say, do you know what, I'm so pleased that happened, or I did that? What are you most proud of?
There's a few of them. So, one of them would have to be being the original cast member of Starlight Express, because on our opening night, Her Royal Highness came with Prince Philip, and they came on stage and shook her hand, and she spoke to me. So, I mean, how often is that going to happen, you know?
Yeah.
And she's, it's not that she's just the Queen of England. I mean, she's one of the longest standing monarchs on the planet.
Absolutely, yes.
I mean, so she's a legendary queen. I don't think any previous queens have been on the throne as long as she has, have they?
That's right. No, you're absolutely right.
I mean, yeah, as far as I can remember. I don't know the history that well, but as far as I can remember,
no,
I think she's one of the longest. Yeah, she's one of the longest sitting queens. So that's legendary to say that. I shook her hand and she spoke to me. She said, "Well, how fast were you going on this day?" And I was so nervous not to, you know, they taught me the protocol and don't speak to her, allow her to speak to you first and this and that, you know. Because I'm from America, you know, I would have said, yo, what's up, Queenie, baby? What's happening? You know, what's going on? You know, no, I'm just joking.
That would have been the first for her, I'm sure. She'd have loved it.
Oh, my goodness. He's a bit active, isn't he? No, but, you know, so I was just like, you know, but that was an amazing moment. That was an amazing moment. Other than that, working with Paul McCartney. I mean, because 1964, I was a kid, and I was watching when the Beatles came to America, and everyone at the airport screaming, and all these girls, and they were just the biggest thing that had ever happened, right?
Yeah.
And Paul was my favorite Beatle all along, and he recruited me to be a dancer in his movie Give My Regards to Broad Street.
Oh, wow.
And when I first met him, they flew me to the UK. He recruited me to be in his movie. I'm at the hotel. The car picks me up, takes me out to the studio. And when he meets me, he grabs me by my hand and he walks me to the camper where he and Linda are having lunch together. I have lunch with them. Then he takes my hand and he walks me and shows me the whole set and everything. And I'm like, I'm walking with Paul McCartney.
Surreal.
Paul McCartney is holding my hand. I'm walking with Paul McCartney. And I kept saying this to myself, but I didn't want to make it obvious to him, because I don't even know if he understood the moment that I was going through.
My. Oh, isn't that great? Isn't it wonderful when you meet your heroes? That's just incredible, isn't it?
Oh, it's an amazing. And then he was so nice. He was so accommodating. He was just such a great person. So that's what makes it even more better, you know?
Wow. I mean, both of those moments that you're talking about there must remain with you for your life. You're never going to forget those, are you?
Oh, definitely. Oh, definitely. And then, of course, working with Michael, of course, and
Yeah.
being his dance brother and staying up at his ranch with him and just talking one-on-one with him and just spending so much time with him. It's just, those are other things. Because I know I'll never meet another person like him in my life. I know that, you know. If I lived another 100 years, I'll never meet another person like Michael.
No, they say that, don't they? He was quite an incredible, not only performer, but the person was quite charismatic and yes, a one-off, wasn't he?
Yes, yeah, so because he was so honest. He was brutally honest. It's like we're on the set working on a video, and this other choreographer is explaining what he wants to do on Smooth Criminal, but he's talking through it, and you don't talk through it to Michael. Michael's a dancer. You show him.
Yes.
So the guy's going, right here, we want to do Annie. Are you okay? Annie, are you okay? Are you okay, Annie? And he's showing Michael to move it as he's talking. So Michael's looking at me through the side of his eyes and smirking. And the guy goes, I saw that. What are you two doing? He said, Michael, are you paying attention? And Michael goes, was it that obvious? Like any other person would have went, oh, no, I was paying attention. No. You know, but he's so honest. He just said, oh, was it that obvious? And I was surprised. That's just how honest he is. When I stayed at his ranch with him, and it's time to go to bed, and Michael goes to bed at a decent hour. He doesn't stay up late. So, and he's go, Jeffrey, you can go to the train station. You can watch TV. You can go around the grounds, whatever you want to do. If you're hungry, call this number, and they'll fix food for you. He said, I'm going to bed. So he goes towards his room, and I go, okay, Mike, have a good night's sleep. He goes, okay. And he'll go, I love you. And I go, I love you too. And he'll go, I love you more. Like, he sets you up for that every time. But guys don't talk like that, do they?
They know. And that's that. But isn't that wonderful, though?
But,
because why
but
not?
He's so honest. He doesn't feel intimidated or inhibited by stuff like that. He's just himself. So he says, you know, I love you, and I love you more.
Yeah.
And you know,
oh wow,
guys normally wouldn't talk like that, but he's just, it's like, you know, he feels your family, and he genuinely loves you and appreciates
yeah.
you, and he shows it, you
oh.
know.
And that's that. How
yeah.
special is how special was that? I mean, that was just incredible, wasn't it, really? That, you know, he
yeah,
was
yeah.
he was like that, and just so, you know, full of love. And I think that people are frightened in a way, aren't they, to show that side of their characters.
You know, I went out to a club the other night here, and it's sad what's happening to clubs, because I've seen it in the UK too. When I was going to clubs in the 80s, we were dancing. We're out there dancing.
Yeah.
We were just waxing the dance floor, having the great time of our life. Today, they just bring bottles to table, and everyone wants to sit in the VIP, and everyone's watching to see who's who and who's ordering what. Is that fun?
No, it's not, is it? Wow. Has everybody got lost somewhere along the line in this last 20 years? It seems to have, yeah, the authenticity and the thirst for life seems to have disappeared,
yeah.
doesn't it? Crikey.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
So with all this great stuff behind you then, Jeffrey, what is it you haven't done yet that you would really love to do?
I have not gotten into a rocket and went into space yet.
Oh, I'd love to do that.
I haven't done that. And one thing that I'm working on now, and I have a couple of treats for everybody, I'm working with a UK artist that I discovered, and I just put about 7 songs in the can with her, and I'm about to debut her, and her name is Sammy J.
Oh, right, okay. This sounds exciting.
Then there's another UK artist I'm working with. His name is Simon. So Simon started off opening for Shalimar, and he has such a Motownish voice, and I was really amazed by it. So I said, well, let's see what we can do. So I wrote a song for and produced a song for him called Wanna Be Your Man. But Sammy, I got about 7 songs. She plays guitar. She does her own song. She is the most amazing singer. It's like the only person I can compare her to is like a Tina Marie.
Okay.
She's such a stylist with her vocals, and she's just amazing. So I think people are going to be very amazed when they see this come out. So this is what I have that I'm working on. Plus, I want to do things socially with Africa, like to try to help, you know, them. You know, I mean, not like, oh, well, they need me to come and help them. I don't mean it like that.
No.
But anything I can do to contribute to the development of the infrastructure and getting things together there. I'm at their service, and that's one of my dreams. That's what I really hope to do.
Oh, that would be amazing. Well, I wish you all the best for that. I've got I've got the dates here for Shalimar as well when they come over. So I'm going to say to everybody, you know, get down and see you. You're in London, Manchester, and Birmingham, aren't you, in November?
Wow!
Yes. So that's going to be terrific. And then you've got all these other wonderful stuff that you're doing that we've all got to watch out for, because you know, I think legendary is not too small a word for you, Geoffrey, to be perfectly honest. We started with that, and I'm sticking with that by the end of our conversation. So
I won't argue with you, but thank you very, very much. I appreciate that so much.
Oh dear. And I know that you've got to go, haven't you, because you've got other people to speak to, and I don't want to let you go, because I'm really enjoying our conversation. But
yeah, I'm enjoying it too. And you know, and that's what makes it so much fun, because it's not like generic. It's not like, okay, question, answer. I mean, we're talking and we're having a conversation, more like an interview, you know what
exactly.
I mean? And that's what makes it so much comfortable and so lively. That's good.
Oh,
it's a good thing.
Oh, that is good. And you know, you've had such a wonderful career, and it's, you know, and it's still going to continue, because you've got that you're inspiring the next generation, you're working with the next generation. I mean, it can't go wrong for you. So I'm so thrilled to have spoken to you, Geoffrey. I really am. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much for your time.
No,
thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Sure. Thank you. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Cattails.
To listen again to this and other tales, go to cattails.co.uk.